KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Akutan, Alaska.
You're tuned in to KAEB, 91.9 on your FM dials, playing you the hits from yesteryear, this year, and the next.
From KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Madsen, delivering the essentials for everyday life in the last frontier. Learn more at madsen.com/Alaska.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Sitka's commercial herring fishery is smaller this year, and that means fishery reports from the state will be restricted. As reported by KCAW's Catherine Rose at an informational meeting on March 19th, area management biologist Aaron Dupuis said that fewer than three processors and a limited fleet are participating this year. Dupuis said the low participation means they cannot release harvest data to the public. The Alaska law, which exists for all fisheries, says that the state can release confidential fish ticket data if more than three entities are involved in the fishery.
Because we will have less than three processors this year. I think this is the first time ever in the history of the Sitka Sound Sacro herring fishery. But because of the number of processors, harvest data will be confidential from this year. That's state law. There's no way around it. Wish it were different sometimes, but harvest information will be confidential this year.
Dupuis says he thinks the fishery, with its limited capacity, could harvest around 1,000 tons per day this year, which is relatively normal for recent years. But the state won't be sharing the daily catch information or the total tonnage of herring harvested at the end of the season. Harvest data is a carefully followed metric in the controversial fishery. Herring eggs have been a highly valued traditional food source for Alaska Native people for thousands of years, and traditional harvesters have called for more conservative management of the commercial fishery for decades. In last year's fishery, the state set the highest ever harvest rate at over 80,000 tons. That number was later called into question after the state released a report acknowledging that it was based on a population estimate nearly double the actual population of fish. However, fishermen only harvested around 12,000 tons, pointing to lower participation and market demand than previous years, even though state data shows the fish population is doing well.
Statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
Cook Inlet's East Side Set Net Fishery won't get to use beach seines this summer following a vote by the Alaska Board of Fisheries on March 15th. As KDLL's Ashlyn O'Hara reports, the vote is a blow to some permit holders who'd hoped the gear would open new fishing opportunities this season.
In recent years, Low King salmon runs have restricted fishing opportunities for more than 400 permit holders, and for the last 2 years, that's meant no fishing season. That's what prompted Brian and Lisa Gabriel to try something new. Using a special permit from the state's Department of Fish and Game Commissioner, they experimented with beach seines last summer. Their goal was to figure out whether the new gear type would let them harvest sockeye salmon while not harming king salmon.
We did that, tested it, and we had very good results.
That's Brian, who's also the mayor of Kenai and has been set netting since the 1980s. Of the more than 15,000 salmon the Gabriels caught with their set beach seine last summer, just 13 were king salmon. All were released alive back into Cook Inlet. Gary Hollier is another longtime Eastside set netter who experimented with beach seines last summer. He reported similar results to the board last week. No kings killed.
The Department of Fish and Game and the Board of Fish is asked the set net fleet to come up with some way to harvest sockeye and not kill kings. Beach seining is the simplest and most cost-effective way to achieve those two goals.
So, the Gabriels brought their results to the State Board of Fisheries, which met in Anchorage last week. It isn't normally when board members would consider a proposal like this, but the Gabriels last fall successfully got on the agenda as an out-of-cycle request. The Gabriels wanted the board to add beach seines to the type of fishing gear allowed under a new management plan for the Kenai River's late-run king salmon fishery. State board members approved the plan last year. Here's Brian again.
What that did for us as set netters is it put us where we weren't allowed to fish with our set nets unless we hit a target of 14,250.
That's 14,250 large king salmon. State data show runs haven't hit that target in recent seasons. Last year, the cumulative king run was just over 6,600 fish. For set netters wanting to fish, those numbers don't indicate great odds. The board said it received about 150 public comments in support of adding beach seines to set netters' toolbox when king runs are low. At the same time the board adopted a more restrictive plan for late-run Kenai River kings, they newly allowed set netters to fish commercially with dip nets, like those used during the Kenai and Kasilof Rivers' popular personal use fishery. Through the proposals submitted last week, the Gabriels asked for permission to use dip nets and their set beach seines. Multiple board members, like Anchorage Representative Curtis Chamberlain, said the results of the Gabriels' experimental fishery were encouraging. Others said more data is needed before they'd vote to approve beach seines for the whole fishery.
I firmly believe it is in the best interest of the stock, and that's who our duty is to. And I feel that this leads to a necessary evolution in fishing technique and responsible fisheries management for the best interest of this stock.
But the question ultimately put before board members wasn't the one asked by the Gabriels. Three board members advanced a significant rewrite of the proposal that would have striked set nets entirely from the list of fishing gear allowed in Cook Inlet, regardless of king runs. And it would have only allowed beach seines when king runs got above that 14,250 level. Realizing the rewrite put all set nets at risk, the Gabriel switched quickly from lobbying for their proposal to lobbying against it.
You know, at that point, we just wanted to kill it because, we felt that it violated the public notice. I mean, there's literally, over 400, Eastside set net permit holders that aren't at this meeting to defend them losing their gill nets.
Some board members said the debate over spiking set nets belonged at the next Cook Inlet meeting in 2027. Others suggested there might not be a future for set nets in the inlet. The written proposal failed on a tie 3-3 vote. Mike Woods, who set nets commercially, recused himself from voting. After all was said and done, set netters walked away from last week's meetings with no new beach seine permissions and after almost losing their principal gear type entirely. Now, the ball is largely in the court of Alaska Fish and Game Commissioner Doug Vincent Lang. He said Wednesday he's cautiously optimistic about the results of the Gabriels experiment, but he agrees more data is needed.
I think they demonstrated this gear has the potential of selectively harvesting sockeye salmon with low impact to Chinook salmon, but I think before we get into a point where we're going to just legalize that fishery across the broad geography of the Eastside set net fishery, we need to do a little bit more work.
Vincent Lang says his next steps include figuring out how to best issue more special permits to help fill in data gaps, the biggest one being how representative the Gabriel's data is of other fishery sites. And as he brainstorms what the next round of special permits could look like, he says he'll work with the state law department to do so in a way that doesn't go against the board's intent. For their part, Brian and Lisa Gabriel say they're up to the challenge of collecting more data. Here's Lisa.
This board has told us that they want more data, so we're going to make sure that data is there and it's complete.
But they say they're concerned about some of the board's rhetoric regarding set nets.
Just to be told that we are put on notice for our next meeting, that they are basically going after our gill nets, I think that's pretty interesting. bold strategy.
Looking farther ahead, Vincent Lang says he shares some board members' concerns about the long-term future of set gill nets in Cook Inlet.
When you have a gear type that's non-discriminatory, I mean, it's just that isn't selective to a certain species, you end up with concerns. So right now, the board made that decision. We're abiding by that decision, and the board can make another decision in 2 years from now. Whatever they want to do, that's their decision. But we are going to continue to manage that fishery based on the action plan, which basically doesn't provide any set net opportunity.
All versions of the Beach Seine proposal, the Gabriel's final report, and recordings of the Board of Fisheries meetings can be accessed on the Alaska Department of Fish and Game website. Reporting in Soldotna, I'm Ashlyn O'Hara.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund. In recognition of the fishing industry, which provides more than 50,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
The Alaska seafood industry says it's getting crushed by unfair trade, and tariffs are part of the problem. The Alaska Desk's Theo Greenlee reports that industry groups are urging the federal government to push back against international competition they say doesn't play by the rules.
Two major Alaska seafood trade groups are sounding the alarm. The At-Sea Processors Association and Pacific Seafood Processors Association earlier this month sent a letter to the Trump administration warning against hardline trade policies. They say new tariffs could trigger retaliation. The At-Sea Processors Association represents most of the vessels that catch and process pollock in the Bering Sea. CEO Matt Tinning says all of these disputes threaten Alaska seafood, which is already at a disadvantage.
We also face unfair competition in global markets. Unfair competition from low-cost producers who aren't held to appropriate labor and environmental standards. In the seafood space, the worst offender is Russia.
Russian seafood has flooded markets in recent years. And while the Biden administration closed a loophole that allowed Russian fish into the U.S. market, American producers are still struggling to compete overseas. Existing tariffs are part of that struggle. Alaska seafood was hit pretty hard during the 2018 trade war with China, which still has tariffs in place on U.S. seafood. And earlier this month, China announced an additional 10% tariff in response to the new tariffs Trump imposed days before. The European Union, one of Alaska's biggest export markets, also continues to impose tariffs from the last trade war, even as their own products enter the U.S. duty-free. In their letter, the two Alaska trade groups warn about further retaliation. Tinning says they aren't necessarily opposed to reciprocal tariffs, but the industry is particularly fragile, exporting about two-thirds of what it produces, so they're vulnerable to trade tensions.
And so we really do live and die by fair access to those export markets.
The trade groups also raised concerns about labeling rules in the European Union, where Russian caught pollock is sometimes sold as Alaska pollock, even if it was caught and processed entirely outside the U.S. They say the combination of foreign tariffs, labeling confusion, and global overproduction could push the already struggling sector to the brink, especially if retaliatory tariffs from countries like China or Canada once again target U.S. seafood. In Unalaska, I'm Theo Greenlee.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Hello, Americans. This is Paul Harvey. Stand by for news. The newlywed Pollocks of Fort Wayne, Indiana, fixing up their first home, were so proud, so eager to make everything just right, including the new lawn. And for the mulch they needed, they went to the Fort Wayne store, that Walmart on Coldwater Road, because the price is so much less at Walmart. They borrowed a neighbor's van and picked up 100 bags of mulch. But during the ensuing days, the Pollocks discovered they'd miscalculated what they needed by 70 bags. And the neighbor had sold his van. Now what to do? Well, Leanne Pollock called Walmart and explained the situation. Did they have a delivery service? And the Walmart associate said, let's see what we can do. Within one hour, the 70 bags of mulch were delivered. And when the Pollocks offered to pay for the delivery service, the Walmart man said, we don't have a delivery service. He had just borrowed a truck from another Walmart associate. And Leanne writes, he had unloaded the bags for her. He would accept no payment. Well, Mr. and Mrs. Pollock, welcome to Fort Wayne and to your new home. And let us know if there's anything else we can do. Tropical Storm Gabriel meandered for days in the Gulf of Mexico, but is now moving west to east across Florida with heavy rain, high winds, fierce tornadoes. At 4 this morning, from the Skyjack airliner which crashed into the Pentagon, both black boxes were recovered, the flight data recorder and the voice data recorder. We should now learn details of all cockpit communication and conversation. An enormously impressive vote of confidence for President Bush today. A survey by this ABC network reveals that 9 of 10 Americans are applauding his performance on the job. President Bush met with his cabinet this morning for the first time this week. He briefed them on his plan to mobilize a worldwide pursuit and a search and destroy mission to eliminate all terrorists. The first overseas airline passengers have arrived in Los Angeles from Italy, and they say that their luggage was searched with such diligence that not even a fingernail file was allowed aboard. You will hear today, if you haven't, that tens of thousands of our military reserves are being called up for homeland defense. Any other week, what I'm about to relate might have gone unnoticed, but our Coast Guard boarded a Carnival cruise ship in the Caribbean and removed two men. At the Pink Pony Bar in Daytona Beach, two men were mean-mouthing our country and threatening bloodshed. One of them left on the bar his copy of the Koran, the Muslim cookbook. At the same time in Algiers, Islamic rebels killed 7 people. State Secretary Powell is a very persuasive man. That gift is bringing the world into line behind us, U.S., most of the world. Among the retaliatory options being considered, one involves bombing terrorist hideouts in Afghanistan. Our warplanes would have to overfly Pakistan, and Pakistan has not yet said yes. Pakistan is one of only 3 countries that recognize the Taliban, the hard-line Islamic militia which rules Afghanistan. Osama bin Laden's been operating in at least 34 countries. Our Library of Congress research indicates his followers may be equipped with some shoulder-fired Stinger missiles capable of shooting down airliners, because the United States supplied such weapons to the Muslims when they were fighting the Soviet Union in Afghanistan in the 1980s. This has to figure in our computations. It was decades of ground war in Afghanistan which bankrupt the Soviet Union. The official newspaper of Iraq today blames us. The Ba'ath Party paper in Baghdad said the terror attacks were the inevitable outcome of United States involvement in the affairs of other countries. The leading Taliban clerics in Afghanistan this morning were calling for the world's Muslims to unite against the United States. Now, page 2, somebody has discovered in a review of the periodic table of contents of elements that element number 20 has a pronounced effect on preventing the second leading cause of nursing home admissions. Amazingly, this element 20, has also been found to reduce the risk of bone fractures of the hip and the wrist and the spine. And I know what you're thinking. Element 20 must be some new discovery. It is not. In fact, element 20 has been around for years, and you're probably not getting enough of it. What is element 20? Calcium. Calcium. And the best way to get enough calcium is to take Citrical every day. Because Citrical is a patented form of calcium which is supported by an avalanche of research, proving it is better absorbed than others. That's your insurance policy for the future. So don't settle for some store brand. There really is a difference. Just remember CIT as in citrus, Cal as in calcium, and insist on CitraCal. In New York, we love heroes. As no place on earth, we ticker tape our heroes. We love to celebrate heroes. This week we discovered heroes who've been among us all along, but rarely noticed and almost never celebrated. Firemen. And you have wondered why in the world anybody would want to be one. If you will meet me here at this time on this ABC station tomorrow, Saturday, we are going to try to figure out why. Medical surgical, gently warming a patient's skin before an operation, gently warming the patient's skin may reduce the risk of surgical wound infection by as much as 60%. The bacteria which commonly infect surgical wounds are becoming immune to antibiotics, so this warming procedure could counteract that. Details in the medical journal Lancet. Now, medical nutritional. Autumn olives are plants with tiny red berries like small cranberries. They can thrive in the poorest soil, so highway crews have been planting these things along roadsides to prevent erosion. What do you know? Now our USDA discovers that the berries are not only edible, but they are rich in antioxidant lycopene, 18 times more lycopene than tomatoes. If any law enforcement agency wants to wiretap the telephone or computer of a suspected terrorist, a judge may refuse to allow it. The United States Senate has already passed a new law to make such surveillance permissible, and Congress is moving fast to authorize the president to use whatever force is required to corral terrorists and $40 billion to help repair the damage. Don't you know it has to confound our nation's enemies and inspire our friends, the degree to which our Congress, left and right, Republican and Democrat, has moved together this week? March 30 last year, in Azle, Texas, Terry Thompson's car broke down, so he borrowed his son's bike to get to work. Well, work was more than 34 miles away. That's both ways 68.8 miles. It was when his wife said that he'd never make it that Terry got stubborn. Now, that, remember, was March of last year. Terry has ridden his bike to and from work every day since. Put a bottle of water in a backpack, he's now biked 23,400 miles. That's the distance from Azle, Texas to Bombay, India. He says he wouldn't travel any other way. He's worn out 4 new bikes, a few injuries, mostly from dogs getting in the way. Once he saw an elderly lady with an electric wheelchair trying to get up a hill, and he stopped and fetched a rope and towed her up. Terry Thomas's gas bill is nil, but his grocery bill is enormous. And yet he is trim as an athlete, even at 42. He says with a sedentary lifestyle, he'd now weigh 675 pounds. Page 3.
I'll never forget her first baby steps. She walked right into my arms. The first book she ever read, she read to me. The first skin knee, she wanted me to make it all better. I took her to her first day of school. She came to me when she had trouble with her homework and when she learned that cooties aren't real. When that boy from math class wouldn't stop pulling her hair, I was the one she came to. And when word about the birds and the bees started to travel in her circle, she came to me. So why didn't she come to me the first time someone passed her a joint? Don't wait for your child to come to you when it comes to drugs. Talk to them first. If you're not sure where to begin, call 1-800-729-6686 for a brochure. You'll learn all you need to know to take that first step. It's not too early to talk to your kids about drugs. A message from the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Greetings today to the Gordons of Fleming, Colorado. Hazel and Kenneth have been married for 70 years today. Shop Talk Television Networks, following the assassination of President Kennedy, canceled all commercials and gave blanket coverage to that news story, the death of President Kennedy, for 2 days. This week, the big three networks had canceled commercials and given blanket coverage to this story for 4 days. And Nielsen Media Research reports some viewer fatigue. The combined television audience was 60 million on Tuesday. By Wednesday, it was down to 43.6 million. This is personal. Intermingling with the others, there are tears of pride in my eyes today, because today in Chicago, the AWRT, the National Organization of American Women in Radio and Television, will present their first ever award for lifetime achievement to Angel Harvey. In the spotlight, what kind of a reason would you have to explain the season for the Colorado Rockies? I don't know, but the team mascot has given up. Dinger has resigned, going to pursue some other interests. There's something I want you to think about over the weekend, and let me have your response to this. Has this week changed the dynamics of warfare? It's important that we know. Our president is pondering that question right now. Has this week changed the dynamics of warfare? Must we all shift gears now from technology to terrorism? What good, for example, is an orbiting satellite against a madman with a knife? And will future airline passengers resist skyjackers if they feel they are doomed either way? And then the terrorist would have to resort to biological weapons, poisoning a city's water supply, or releasing potentially deadly viruses. Well, as I say, our president's men are pondering these possibilities right now as they contemplate ways and means of going after and taking out all terrorists, whatever their weapons of choice. Now, page four, Stuart Bryant of Kenfield, Ohio, was losing his eyesight, macular degeneration, the wet type. Last October, he heard you and me talking about something called ocular nutrition, and he ordered some. Now I'm quoting, "Leaking blood vessels have dried up, vision and distortion have improved wonderfully." But that's just one case, you say? No, it's not. Elaine Lansing of San Antonio, Texas, was told she would have to have eye surgery to get her driver's license renewed. Then she heard you and me talking about ocular nutrition from High Health. She telephoned 1-800-686-2299. She ordered ocular nutrition. It's now 3 years later, and Elaine reports she had no operation. She no longer has any macular degeneration. She has her driver's license, and her doctor says her eyes are very healthy. Ocular nutrition from High Health. 1-800-686-2299. I know High Health has heard similar results from hundreds of people. In fact, the American Medical Association Journal confirms that macular degeneration may improve with proper nutrition, and High Health has combined all of the recommended vitamins and minerals in a single capsule. Ocular nutrition. You can order with a phone call to 1-800-686-2299. Oh, I do indeed take ocular nutrition from High Health every day. One more time, that 800 number is 686-2299. Agronomics, the young Christmas tree crop in Michigan is down to one-fourth what it was last year. The wet spring delayed planting, and then it was the hottest, driest summer in 13 years. Wholesale prices increased 0.4 in August. Most of the increase was in gasoline and other energy products. The farmers sure didn't get it. China, with almost never enough rainfall, is persistently plagued by locusts. Where there is enough water for the survival of ducks and chickens, the ducks and chickens keep the population of locusts in check. Elsewhere in China, swarms of locusts can denude cropland in hours. So, in western China, farmers are advertising for reinforcements. They're willing to pay for snakes and sparrows and frogs. They're not going to get many frogs. I don't think they can compete with the prices offered by big city restaurants. For what it's worth, in Madison, Wisconsin, Richard Williams, roasting a turkey for dinner, put the turkey in the oven, forgetting that that oven is where he hides his handgun. Boom. Oh boy, I mean a big boom. Richard Williams is Madison, Wisconsin's chief of police. Paul Harvey, good day.
You're listening to Statewide News from Alaska Public Media. I'm Ava White. The Alaska LNG project took a step forward Thursday.
That's when the board of the state-run Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation authorized an agreement with pipeline developer Glenfarne Group to shepherd the project to a final investment decision.
We have been bringing the Midnight Oil to move forward and to work on these definitive agreements with Glenfarne.
That's Frank Richards, president of AGDC. He called into Thursday's special board meeting from Tokyo. It's the latest stop on his East Asian tour with Governor Mike Dunleavy to promote the project. Under the agreement, Glenfarne will own 3/4 of the $44 billion project. The state of Alaska will own the other quarter. If it's built, the Alaska LNG project would move natural gas between the North Slope and South Central. The full project includes a gas treatment plant on the slope, an 800-mile pipeline, and a liquefaction and export facility in Nikiski. As the new owner, Glenfarne's first task will be to update the project's existing cost estimate to $2,025. AGDC estimates that work will cost around $150 million. A small piece, $4 million, is covered by an existing federal appropriation secured by U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski in 2023. If the project ultimately doesn't move forward, Glenfarne will be able to recoup as much as $50 million from a backstop okayed by Alaska's state-run development agency. On a Thursday evening call with reporters, Dunleavy said Alaska is closer than it's ever been to getting the pipeline project off the ground. But he says he understands if people still have doubts about its prospects. It remains to be seen whether enough investors will sign on for the project to be built. The state will share harvest data from the Sitka Sound Sacro herring fishery after all. That's after participating processors gave the Alaska Department of Fish and Game the green light to share the data with the public. At an information meeting last week, area management biologist Aaron Dupree announced that, due to low participation, the fishery did not meet the legal threshold this year for the state to share harvest data. State policy says that fish ticket data will be held confidential unless at least three entities are participating in a given fishery. It's a rule the state applies to all fisheries. But according to an ADF&G announcement on Tuesday, processors have now agreed to waive their right to keep the data confidential this year. According to the announcement, from Saturday to Monday, just over 1,900 tons of herring were caught when the fishery was open. This is Alaska Public Media.
The Alaska Morning News is brought to you in part by
First National Bank Alaska, offering a one-solution, tailored approach for your financial needs, from banking and loans to investments and more, helping Alaskans shape a brighter tomorrow. More at fmbalaska.com.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Lilly Endowment, a private foundation supporting NPR's coverage of religion and spirituality, and Jarl and Pamela Mohn, focusing on civil liberties, foster youth, public radio, and the arts.
Fiber Plus Internet is now available in Sandpoint and King Cove. GCI offers high-speed internet in your community at the same plans and pricing as in Anchorage. More information is available at gci.com/internet.
This is statewide news from Alaska Public Media. I'm Ava White. In a sudden move, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, is pulling up to $43 million in federal grants that support public health programs in Alaska. The COVID-era grants were meant to reduce health disparities in the state, especially for rural residents. They were also helping the state prepare for the next pandemic or public health emergency. Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra has more.
The federal government notified Alaska's Division of Public Health Tuesday that the state won't receive millions of dollars in public health grants it was expecting over the next 2 years. The State Department of Health didn't agree to an interview for this story, but spokesperson Alex Huseman said by email that the department is assessing the potential impacts and next steps. The funds were meant to address the continued impact of COVID-19 on the economy, public health, state and local governments, individuals, and businesses. Dr. Ann Zink led the state's response to the COVID-19 pandemic as chief medical officer. She says the money was also meant to reduce the impact of future disease outbreaks and pandemics.
I worry that without letting them finish, we will be set back tremendously. Again, it's hard to know for sure, but it feels like decades of lessons learned are going backwards if we lose this.
Singh says stopping the funding partway through projects is a waste of money and effort.
The money that was already spent may not be realized in its benefit to Alaskans because we may not be able to finish the project, or we started something and can't get it done.
One of the state's projects that is losing funding is an electronic records sharing system, which is partially finished. That's according to a source working at the Division of Public Health. The source doesn't want to be identified because they're not authorized to speak to media. Singh says the system would allow for data sharing between public health and the broader healthcare system to help them communicate and work better together. The division source says this COVID-era funding was also focused on reducing health disparities across the state, especially in rural Alaska. They say such major cuts will have a devastating ripple effect throughout all Alaska public health programs. And they say almost 10% of the division, 50 people, are fully funded by the cut grants, and some are likely to lose their jobs. The state did not give an estimate of the total amount of funding lost, but the source provided documents showing the grants amounted to $25 million in funds already allocated by Congress. An additional $18 million cut has already been awarded to state organizations and contractors, they say, and the future of those funds is uncertain and complicated legally. A majority of the funding, the source says, has gone toward expanding rural health access, but the Anchorage Health Department has also received a big chunk of funding to reduce disparities within urban areas. A spokesperson for the Anchorage Health Department says they don't currently have enough information to say how the city may be impacted by this decision. Zink says the grants were aimed at the biggest public health concerns in Alaska.
These dollars were very tailored to what Alaskans need and want. And these were not federal dollars telling us how to practice or what to do. Alaska got the opportunity to decide if we were going to apply for them or not, and apply for them in ways that met the department's goal of the health, well-being, and self-sufficiency of Alaskans. And to have those dollars cut, which are Alaskan taxpayer dollars, is going to hurt Alaskans. And that is hard for me to watch.
It's unclear whether the state will be able to pay the contracts that have already been promised to organizations and communities across the state. In Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
This is Alaska Public Media.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They learn much more than I'll ever know. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, it is a wonderful world, and good morning, everybody out here. The only thing that makes this even better is, thank God it's Friday, TGIF. Well, I guess that doesn't matter either. We're all a bunch of fishermen around here. It doesn't matter what day it is. When we're fishing half the time, we don't know what day it is or what time it is for sure. Anyway, oh yeah, beautiful day today. It really is. It was windy a little bit this morning. It seems to go down in the daytime normally. You know, big winds are at night, but it was blowing snow sideways. I love it when it does that, even in the spring. Anyway, Eddie Arnold's going to start us off with There's Been a Change in Me. After that, Johnny Cash with drums, and then Red Foley and Ernest Tubb with Tennessee Border number 2.
When I was very young, my mother often said I was a bashful kid, my face was always red. I was afraid of girls, but now you see, la-di-da, there's been a change in me. Then at the age of 12, I went to my first dance. We played some kissing games, and then I got the chance to learn about how nice a kiss can be. You know, there was a change in me. I started noticing the little girl next door. I walked her home from school, I never did before. I even carved her name upon a tree. Oh boy, there was a change in me. I took to slicking up my hair with lots of goo, and I would shine my shoes and look in mirrors too, until my mother said, "Why, son, it's true, Eddie, there's been a change in you." I sure did get around. Why, I was number one with all the girls in town. I had a different date most every night. There was a change, all right. But now I've met a gal who stole my heart away. I'm gonna marry her and settle down someday. And if I'm true to her, then I'll agree. There's been a change in me.
From the Indian reservation to the governmental school, well, they're going to educate me to the white man's golden rule. And I'm learning very quickly, for I've learned to be ashamed. And I come when they call Billy, though I've got an Indian name. And there are drums beyond the mountain, Indian drums that you can't hear. There are drums beyond the mountain, and they're getting mighty near. And when they think that they've changed me, cut my hair to meet their needs, will they think I'm white or Indian, quarter blood, or just half breed? Let me tell you, Mr. Teacher, when you say you'll make me right, in 500 years of fighting, not one Indian turned white. And there are drums beyond the mountain, Indian drums that you can't hear. There are drums beyond the mountain, and they're getting mighty near. Well, you thought that I knew nothing when you brought
me here to school. Just another empty Indian, just America's first fool. But now I can tell you stories that are burnt and dried and old, but in the shadow of their telling walks the thunder, proud and bold. And there are drums beyond the mountains, Indian drums that you can't hear. There are drums beyond the mountain, and they're getting mighty near. Lone Pine and Sequoia, Handsome Lake and Sitting Bull. There's Mangus, Colorado, with his leaves so red and full. Crazy Horse, the legend, those who bit off Custer's soul. They are dead, yet they are living with the great Geronimo. And there are drums beyond the mountains, Indian drums that you can't hear. There are drums beyond the mountains, and they're getting mighty near. Well, you may teach me this land's history, but we taught it to you first. We broke your hearts and bent your journeys. Broken treaties left us cursed. Even now, you have to cheat us. Even though you think us tame, in our losing, we found proudness. In your winning, you found shame. And there are drums beyond the mountains, Indian drums that you can't hear. There are drums beyond the mountains, and they're getting mighty near.
Stuck out so firm, she didn't have much sense.
She could gnaw an ear of corn right through a picket fence.
Her marriage license cost a quarter on the Tennessee border. Out to see what we could see.
Just then he saw her husband, and he stood 6'3". He had brass knuckles made to order.
Now my teeth are scattered on the Tennessee border. Her hair was red, her name was Hannah. Her nose looked like a big banana. Weighed so much he had some trouble. He thought that he was seeing double.
He put his arm around her and he tried to hug her,
but he couldn't get close enough, 'cause she had too much blubber.
She was too fat, he couldn't court her. Now she wears a girdle round her Tennessee border.
I took her out just across the line.
She stumped her toe and fell in a bale of turpentine.
Hey, Ernest.
Yeah, Red.
Whatever in the world ever happened to that old man's daughter?
Well, the last time I saw her, Red, she was heading for the Tennessee border.
And what's this day famous for? March 28th was day after 61 years and one day after the great earthquake that hit, hit Anchorage and Kodiak pretty bad. Tidal waves and all that. But other than that, on March 28th, 1955, is the day that the great Reba McEntire was born. She's born in Oklahoma, McAlester, Oklahoma, and grew up in a family ranch in at Atoka County. Anyway, she was when she was young, she was into barrel racing. She was pretty good, but much better singer. So we'll have her take us to the top of the hour. First, my favorite one by Reba is Take It Back. She's just doing blues there. I mean, it's unreal. And then after that, New Fool at an Old Game, and The Only Promise That Remains, we might have time for a little bit of How Blue, all by Birthday Girl, Reba McEntire.
Me. And you forget the place we came.